Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are when you are watching this. My name is Charisse Alexander, your host of Your Collective. On today's episode, I'll be joined by Neetu Ramawad. Neetu is a registered dietitian. I wanted to say all things female, but really what she works within is as and how we as women can utilize food to really support not only our menstrual cycle, but our hormones, any real change in life that you're going through as a female. I'm super passionate, as many of you know, about how we can really connect mind, body, spiritual health. And of course, we got to live in this body during this journey. So feeling good is a critical part of that journey. So without further delay, I will turn it over to Neetu to tell us a little bit more about herself, her journey, what she does, and how she can help you find comfort and ease in your own body. So welcome, Neetu. Thank you for joining today.
And thank you. This is such an important topic. So I'm really happy. And I'm always so grateful to connect with podcasters like yourself that shine light and want to have discussions about women's health, because I think we are in a hormonal epidemic. And the more information we can provide and empower women about their bodies on all levels, I think is so important. So thank you, first of all, for having this conversation. I'm really grateful to have this conversation with you. Yeah, so I'm a certified holistic nutritionist. I really specialize in food as medicine and helping women understand how to support their bodies and have healthy menstrual cycles and why that's really healthy. I also specialize in preconception care naturally, how to prepare the body a few months before you're trying to get pregnant and how we can course correct some of the challenges before, you know, going through IVF, while during IVF, egg freezing, egg retrievals, IUIs, and help women support through that. So I started this journey, you know, I always had an interest in food as medicine. And as I was going through my schooling, I was just seeing, you know, how this was relevant to like family members that had some chronic issues going on and what they could do to eat. And in the meantime, I was really healing my own menstrual cycle. I always suffered from severely painful cycles where I'd be really reliant on medication for like a day or two to deal with my cramps. And then I had a wake up call when I had a ruptured ovarian cyst. And I didn't know what was happening. I just woke up with a lot of pain and a couple days of pain before that, but it got worse. And, you know, I had to be rushed. I had to go to the emergency. And when I went there, they just like did an ultrasound. They're like, hey, you've got this ruptured ovarian cyst. Here's some, you know, codeine and go home.
And off you go. Yeah.
I was so confused because I'm like, how is this happening? This is like happening on like, you know, an ovary. It was so serious to me. And I really didn't get a lot of answers from my primary care practitioner. You know, in my experience, I was very dismissed for asking a lot of questions. And as I was studying, I was getting a lot more answers about like what was happening to my menstrual cycle that led to this, and not just my cycle and, you know, what I was eating, but a lifestyle that I was living, a really stressful lifestyle that I was living, contributing to the pain. So 6 months later, I had a surgery scheduled and I had the cyst removed. I didn't have a lot of options other than a medication, a birth control, and the surgery. And I was like, there's got to be something else here, because I'm like, something is missing. And when they went in, they also found stage one endometriosis, which I had no idea I had. And it was contributing to my painful period. So that's when I was like, okay, if this happens again, I'm going to be told that I need to be on birth control permanently or like have a hysterectomy. And those were not options for me. And that's sort of where I really took a lot of control in terms of changing my diet, my lifestyle, my products. And it led to deeper healing on an emotional level as I continued that journey, because as a holistic being, it's never just one thing.
I'm curious, if you don't mind me asking, you look really young. So I'm curious, when this experience happened, how old were you?
I think I was around 28.
Okay.
Yeah, 28, 29, yeah.
And in your experience, like to me, having a ruptured ovarian cyst, and I've never had the experience, so I don't really know anything about it. Is that normal for that age? Like, are you in your experience seeing, you know, these things happening to women at younger and younger ages? I think is really the question that I'm asking.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's so individual, right? Like cysts are normal. They don't always get to the size where they rupture. And it is very common. Sometimes you have a cyst in a cycle. It might actually pass with that cycle depending on the size of it, right? Cysts typically form through estrogen dominance. Estrogen is a growth hormone. So any tissue in the body that responds to estrogen will tell it to grow. And, you know, there are certain foods that contribute to estrogen dominance. There's also the organ function component, right? Where our liver is very much responsible for detoxifying excess estrogen in the body. So making sure that, you know, you're supporting the organs that detoxify, but also, you know, are involved in hormone production is really important.
Yeah. You know, you said something really important that the last few guests have really emphasized as well, which is, and of course, this podcast, we talk about mind, body, spiritual health.
Yeah.
And or whatever word resonates with you for that spirit piece. But you said that on your journey, it took you down a road of like, okay, so there's this physical manifestation in my body of dis-ease. And of course, it opens up, okay, well, there's other things here as well. And so when you're working with your clients, are they coming to you from a space of similar to your own, where it's like, okay, I'm struggling with this thing physically. And then we go down this road of looking at the other areas as well. And how open, I mean, I imagine you do, but how open are they generally speaking to understanding that there's something deeper here at play that's now physically manifesting in your body?
Yeah, it's also a process of meeting somebody where they're at and having that awareness. Like, healing is such a journey. And a lot of the times, women are coming to me because they're just dissatisfied, or they've run out of options that haven't worked in the past, and now they're like ready to take the reins and make changes. So someone's point of awareness of their own inner emotional landscape is so important. But what, yes, I try to do is do, in my initial assessment, it's like really taking an inventory of like what is going on in your life. Like, what are your current stresses? How do you feel day to day? Like, on a day to day, do you wake up with anxiety? Are you moving through your day really frustrated? Are you overall just like not experiencing a lot of joy? And like, let's pinpoint where that's coming from. And what we then try to do is like, okay, well, how can we do this differently? Because, you know, the end goal is to feel better. Sure, we want to lose the weight, like, you know, have clear skin, make sure our hair, skin, nails, the glow up is happening. You know, all the symptoms that are making us unsatisfied, like those things will come. But if we don't make the changes within our mindset to understand, like, what do we need to unlock here? Because why is it that we're not prioritizing our health? Like, is it a self-worth issue? And where did that come from? Do we not feel deserving of the, you know, the body, the energy, and a life that you really want on the other side of this? So we take inventory and have those conversations. And that's like, that's such an opening for certain clients.
Do you feel like there's a shift in healthcare away from, I don't want to say just traditional modalities, but really the mindset around, okay, I'm going to go to the doctor. I'm going to tell them my symptoms or her my symptoms. They're going to give me a script and I'm going to go home and do my thing. Do you feel like there's been a real trend and a real shift away from that towards people wanting to be empowered with, really, to me, I believe health is it's a personal responsibility. That's my thought. Yes, there are all these people and resources and so on and so forth to help me through that, but it's my body. Nobody can tell me what it feels like. Do you feel like that shift is happening now?
Yeah, I do find that more people are interested in like the education. I share a lot of educational content on my page because I want women to feel empowered, right? So I think when we know better, we can do better and make different choices. But yes, I think there's so much more information right now, and people are really getting sucked into it or making the connections and the identifying, you know, this sounds like me, this is resonating. And, you know, we look at certain models of care and there's a time and place for everything. There's a time and place where you need, you know, your primary care practitioner and you might need medication. That's fine. You might need the surgery. That's okay too, right? There's a meeting of those worlds as well. And like, I kind of look at healthcare now as a wheelhouse. You know, it's like, yes, in life, you've got your accountant, your mechanic, your lawyer, your financial advisor. Healthcare is very much similar. And I think we're moving in that way where it's like, okay, I need my primary care practitioner. I need my nutritionist, maybe a naturopath, my osteopath, an acupuncturist, right? Like, because there's all these different aspects and modalities that now serve a different part of what I'm trying to heal holistically.
I love that. And do you think, so that's on the patient side of things or client side of things. Now on the healthcare side of things, do you think that that transition is also occurring where, you know, traditional medicine is a lot more, the perspective has shifted to understanding that there's all these modalities and exactly what you said, that it's a wheelhouse. Do you think that perspective is shifting as well?
I think so. I think there's like a slow adaptation towards it. You know, we do look at like, there's an accessibility piece too, right? Like a lot of times when you're going to a naturopath or an acupuncturist or your osteo or whatever, that may not be covered. So You know what I mean? I think affordable access is really important. That's why I think like all the practitioners that are sharing a lot of information where you have access online is really important, because, you know, we can be empowered through that. Whereas I don't know that I'm seeing that shift in like traditional Western medicine healthcare. Like, I do think it's a very prescribed model and that's what it's for. I can't remember the last time I went to my primary care practitioner and had a conversation about my emotions and my mental health and like my diet. You know, so those conversations are not happening there. And they're usually very short, right? You usually wait a long time to see somebody for 5 minutes versus when you go into your naturopath or a nutritionist, there's a huge intake form prior to, and you're in that consultation for 60 minutes. So the care is very different. So I think both models just provide different things, but I do think there's a growing interest in like exploring these different modalities and like, you know, testing and a shift in like, you know, the value and maybe resourcing yourself to bring that into your life, right? If you're interested in going down that path.
And that's kind of, I guess, one of the other questions that I have is like, okay, so you and I are saying, okay, so yes, on the patient care or client care side of things, yes, there's more interest, more desire to be more empowered with more information. However, we have a healthcare system that doesn't necessarily support that growing shift. So how do patients, so for example, where there's value in traditional healthcare is like, okay, I need to know what the chemicals and the biology is going on within my body, right? Whatever the various levels are. How do I go to the doctor and say, like, of course you do a yearly physical or whatever, but let's say this is outside of that. How do I go to the doctor and say, okay, I just want to order a whole bunch of tests to just see what's going on? Like, how do we merge those two things? And then I, you know, have my test results now, and now I can come to you. Is that actually how it works, that you send the clients off to the primary practitioner, they order all the tests, and then they come back to you? Like, or are you able to actually help and facilitate with that?
Yeah, I have helped facilitated conversations. I remember working with a client who was kind of nervous about, you know, some testing and the way she wanted to go and like moving off medication and like having that conversation with her doctor. Because now, you know, we're course correcting things and things are changing. And this is where I think it's great that you can monitor, right? Because, you know, blood work is a snapshot in time. So, and that's why sometimes you take it with a grain of salt, because, hey, let's say the day before you ate something highly inflammatory, it's going to show up on your blood work the next day versus like you were eating clean for a week. That's also going to look really different. But I think it's like empowering yourself and advocating. I think advocation is really important. I mean, it is your right and your body. So being armed with different ways that you want to like direct the conversation with your primary practitioner and how you want to be supported is really important, right? So letting them know, like, I don't actually want to be on this dosage, or I don't want to be on this medication long-term, birth control, for example, to manage my hormones. So like, this is what I'm doing. You know, I've been making all these changes. Like, how do we get there? And these are the tests or the ultrasounds that I need to get tested, you know, on a quarterly basis, for example. And these are my goals, for example, you know. And, you know, if you're not getting that support with a primary care practitioner that's not necessarily interested in going that route, I would highly suggest trying to find a practitioner that will support you in that way.
I don't want to be the negative Nelly here, but that is so much easier said than done these days.
I know. It's not. And it's a process that I have gone through myself.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just so knowing what you're going to get with who. And again, like, that person may not be where you're getting all your support. That's why like having a well-rounded team and somebody else on the other side to help navigate that and like blend, make, you know, those two worlds and make them work together is important.
Yeah. So let's talk more about kind of some of the different modalities that you use in your process of discovery or working with a client, right? Because I imagine that a lot of it is maybe not a lot, but a little bit of trial and error, like, okay, well, let's do this, let's try that, so on and so forth, until we find that magical combination where your body really gets to be at its highest health potential. Do you want to share some of that with us?
Yeah. So when I'm working with a client, again, like we go through an overall assessment, I get an idea of, you know, their emotional landscape, you know, what's going on in their lives. I usually have them like write a food diary for me. I can see clearly like, you know, what they're eating, what they're consuming, where the gaps are, you know, where there might be nutrient gaps, and then how that's correlating to their symptoms and like, you know, organ function. We work through it that way. And alongside myself, sometimes I'll have them work with a naturopath, you know, where my limitations is I can recommend a lot of supplements, but in terms of something that's prescribed, maybe you might need a naturopathic doctor. I love herbalists. I think there's a lot of value in herbal medicine, a lot of power in plant medicine. It's really nutrient dense and they support organs specifically, right? A lot of herbs work on specific organs and we get that. And herbs for women's health and hormonal health and uterine health. I think that's great. I love working with acupuncturists. I think acupuncture is so important. And I found actually a lot of answers through traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda for specifically women's health. Like I have never found another modality of medicine or that's been lacking in Western medicine that actually talks about the uterus and care that the uterus actually needs. So in acupuncture and somebody that is having painful periods or is trying to conceive, having healthy blood flow, like blood is a transporter of nutrients that we need to get to other places. So if there's stagnation in the body, if we're not getting blood flow to the ovaries, we're not getting nutrients delivered to the ovaries, right? They also believe in like heat. The uterus likes to be warm. It works that way, right? Because blood flow flows when there's heat. Cold constricts. So there's a lot of different theories and answers, I think, for women's health and uterine care within traditional Chinese medicine. And then Ayurvedic has specific practical modalities that you can like do at home for the uterus, right? Like if you're trying to conceive, that this is really great, or have a less painful period. So much more that you have access to and can do for yourself. And those things combined with what I suggest in a protocol work really well, and people can feel changes in a couple, you know, hopefully by their next cycle.
So then, and that, I guess you answered my next question, which was, you know, well, that was my question. So for you, then the majority of the type of care, I guess is the word that I'm going to use, is rooted in Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, correct?
Yeah. And then also the practical parts of Western medicine with like therapeutic supplementation and then, you know, and food and diet.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about food. Now, I know everybody's different and I understand that everybody's different, but are there some real foods that really set off serious inflammation in the female body that are maybe the root cause of most people that you come into contact with? Or is it not that simple and straightforward? And it's because it's so individual and unique, it's kind of all over the place.
No, I think that there's a conventional diet that most people in the Western world will have because it's convenient, or we're living a really fast paced life and it's just convenient to maybe, you know, eat out more often, order food. Maybe it's fast food, a lot of processed foods, for example, packaged foods, things in boxes, things wrapped in plastic. Mm-hmm. It's easy, right? Like you can find something frozen and throw it in the oven or whatever. We don't know how it's made. Food quality is, you know, another thing that's important, right? And, you know, I think there's a lifestyle piece that drives that, right? So somebody that's waking up in a rush in the morning, a lot of anxiety, coffee on an empty stomach, grabbing like, I don't know, a Kellogg's bar, a breakfast bar or something, right? There we're just like spiking our blood sugar. Blood sugar plays a big role in hormonal balance, insulin and ovarian function and ovulation. So we've got like, you know, some top tier hormones like cortisol and insulin, and they're directly responsible then for the production of estrogen and progesterone. Right. So when cortisol is really high, you know, cortisol and progesterone are actually made from the same precursor. So when there's too much cortisol, we're actually stealing from our progesterone reserve, right? And that can impact ovulation. And, you know, progesterone is an amazing hormone. It's our anti-anxiety hormone. So you want to make sure that you're ovulating every month, right? To get those benefits. So that's just like how the cascade can work, right?
Well, I just learned something new today.
Yeah, that's just sort of how it works. And that's how like your diet is impacting that. So making sure that, you know, you're waking up in like a piece, giving yourself some time, right? Like, and I know that's not easy, and carving these habits. I do talk about habit stacking quite a bit, right? We try to do one thing and then we build on it, right? So maybe you're struggling with breakfast in the morning, prepare it the night before. Like you can just make some egg cups, prepare some like turkey sausages or like a chia, you know, oatmeal or something.
A chia pudding.
Yeah, a chia pudding, my favorite. Or something. And, you know, warm it up. And like you can have that quickly. So I think food prep and preparing yourself actually has been one of the things that has helped me a lot. I know some people might struggle with that, but like taking that time on a Sunday or something can really go a long way, because then you're not starving and just grabbing something for the sake of grabbing something and spiking your blood sugar and your cortisol literally all day.
I'm curious, because I've had this conversation with a few people lately, and for my own self, I've never really had any. I'm very fortunate in that way. I've never had. I think the extent of my female challenges have been painful periods.
Right.
And even with that, they've always been they've been super predictable, really manageable. Like cramping was never really a thing. So, but with that, I was really on my own personal journey of like weight. And I often say to people, I'm like, when did food become so complicated? Like, when did it come? Like, just there's so much science behind it. You can't even just eat healthy and have that be enough anymore. And so anyways, it sent me on this journey of, I was at a doctor's office of all places, and I found this book on intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And it was such an interesting read. And I started employing some of the things that the author talks about in the book, and what a difference it had made for me. Does intermittent fasting, because you did talk about eating breakfast. I'm not a breakfast eater, never have been. It's not the thing that I do. And this book finally made it okay for me to not have to eat breakfast in the morning. But how does that play into women's health in what you see?
I think there's a time and place for everything. And I think there's a lot of great benefits for letting your body fast or staying fasted and listening to your own body, right? Like you're your advocate and how you feel. If it's not affecting your menstrual cycle and you're not having symptoms and it's working for you, I think that's great. A lot of times though, women which is a lot of women that have hormonal balances like PCOS, endometriosis, fibroids, there is an imbalance there, and we're trying to course correct that for a certain period to get the body back to a place of homeostasis and stability. And that's where eating and having the satiety of breakfast is really important. So just to give you an example, like your body's always trying to keep you alive. Its main focus is safety. And when we're in a fasted state, especially for women, because we can bear children and we want to ovulate every month, being in a place of feeling having the resources, which is the raw materials, the nutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, keeps your body feeling safe. And that's where something like eating breakfast and balancing your hormones from the day. And that's something that where it's like when you start your day with a healthy breakfast and it's, you're having your protein, a good fats and fiber, and you'll be satiated for hours. Right? It really creates a stability in the body, and your body always feels safe versus like, I'm starving, I'm hungry. And like, we're seeing terrible periods or missing your ovulation, right? So if we're trying to conceive, then that becomes really important. So a little bit situational, but I do think there's a time and place, and I do think there are benefits to intermittent fasting, but where it's not always beneficial in a period of time is in some of those cases I just outlined.
Okay. So I would assume then, kind of based on what you've said, I shouldn't assume, I'll just ask, is there a specific age group that you find that you work with the most, where you, like, what's your demographic?
Yeah, I think women between 28 to 45, they're more interested, maybe more aware of what's going on in their bodies. They might be, go-getters that are living really busy, full lives, but maybe, still experiencing a lot of symptoms like, burnout, fatigue, weight gain, insomnia, missed periods, terrible periods, exhaustion, a host of symptoms, and have tried a bunch of things that haven't worked. And then, they'll come to somebody like me, or women that are also trying to conceive. And again, maybe they've been through multiple rounds of IVF and it's just not working, or IUIs, and then they're interested in an alternative path.
Okay. There was another question I had right on the tip of my tongue. Oh, yes. Infertility. So somebody comes to you after they've done their IVF or IUIs, then I'm assuming that it hasn't been successful. So they start. So then I assume then that you work with them to get them ready pre-pregnancy. And then do you support them throughout the gestational period?
Yeah, I think it's so important. And I love the relationship I end up building with women that I work with. And then, sometimes their spouses also, right? Like I'm so in it with them, right? Through the process. And, there's trial and error going through, and choosing to do something naturally takes more time, right? It's not instantaneous, but potentially neither is expensive rounds of IVF. And I think our system is very quick to push women to IVF without any intervention. And I see what I do as a huge gap in the treatment, because there's a lot of benefits to taking the 3 to 6 months or a year prior, if you know this is a planned pregnancy, to prepare your body. Because if you think about the current state of someone's body, that is like, you know, there's wear and tear over time. Maybe there's hormonal balances that are happening. There are stressors. Getting pregnant itself is not even potentially, depending on how long they're trying, there's a lot of joy sucked out of the process, right? It could be actually really, really emotionally draining, very stressful. There's a lot of pressure there. So having that emotional support system is really important. We also work on egg quality. So we can put a lot of medications into our body and hopefully it'll trigger our body to do what it needs to do. But it's not necessarily that the next egg that you can get pregnant with is getting the quality in terms of like nutrients. This is like the baby's DNA we're talking about now. Developmentally, how the mother's body needs to be, you need to be over-resourced in essential nutrients, right? For yourself, but also your future baby. So working on your diet gives you that time to do that, reduce inflammation that's happening, not just physically, but emotional inflammation as well. And learning some of the lifestyle things that are important. Maybe you're staying up too late and scrolling at night. Well, you know, that's impacting the growth hormone that happens when you get to sleep, right? Mm-hmm. That impacts fertility. So there's a lot of benefits to taking that time to adjust your diet, the supplementation that you might be needing, and then the lifestyle factors as well to help support yourself. And then the meds work better because your body and your organs are functioning better too, if you still want to go down the route of IVF or IUI.
What a great transition though. And what a great way to, you know, give some perspective there. You know, you're right. IVF is likely, from the stories I've heard, can be really stressful, right? Because it's like, it's expensive.
Yep.
And then there's all this expectation that you as a woman are likely placing on yourself and all of your external people and, you know, possibly even your spouse. And so the as you mentioned, the experience would be extremely emotionally stressful if it's not successful on the first round. But what a great way to go through an experience and shift your lifestyle for so that it can be actually an enjoyable process, because it is so enjoyable to be, you know, to have a baby. I'm curious, because you talked about, you know, the relationship that you also tend to create with the spouse as well. Do you work with men?
If they're open to it, it's interesting that sometimes, you know, it's so interesting to me right now, because all the focus is always on the female body. And of course, the female is going to carry the baby, right? But sperm quality is on a huge decline. There's a lot of research that shows that. So men need to really like get on board and not like think that, you know, it's just them. Because if a woman's been trying and she's making all these changes, then what's the missing piece here? It's really important that men get on board and also make those changes for their diet and sperm quality. You know, the volume of sperm that they need to have, the sperm motility is really important. It needs to get to where it needs to get. So can't just, that little bad boy can't be just swimming in circles or backwards, right?
Confused
about where it needs to go. So sperm quality is a big part of this picture. So the health of the man is really important. And sometimes I'm working with a woman for 3 months, and then it's like, you know, a husband might get on board with making some changes to his diet. So
I wonder, is there a counterpart to you? I'm just thinking about all the things that likely come up for men when it's like, you know, when it's like, okay, well, you know, the lady's doing her part.
I think
what are you doing? And the ego that likely comes up with that.
Yeah.
They don't usually think that. Well, the reality is we as women often think that it's our fault or our problem. But is there a counterpart to you then? That because it might be a comfort thing, but I don't know, in your experience.
Not that I've come across.
That's a huge gap.
That's a huge gap. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So men, if there's any of you out there that are interested in holistic healing and fertility in men, there's a huge addressable market. So I imagine that all the things that are affecting women are also affecting men then, like their diet, their stress, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For the listeners, what are some practical skills that they could like employ? Because you talked about accessibility, and you're right. A lot of this information can be, I mean, Google's amazing. And yes, you can, you know, jump online and wow, I have no idea. Are you there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me? Yeah, you froze for a second.
I can, but there seems to be a bit of a lag.
Yeah, I felt that too.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's my side or your side. I'm actually tethered to my phone. Anyways, we'll edit all of this out.
Okay.
What was my question now? Sorry, I was talking about men. Practical skills, practical resources. So if a woman is like, okay, I really want to dive into this a little bit more, where do they start? What are some DIY things? Like, especially if you don't have, you know, an awareness of your body as it is right now, what are some things that are really practical that people can do at home where they can begin to bring that awareness actually into their body?
Yeah. So I think like really sitting with yourself and asking yourself and just, you know, creating that awareness of like, how are you feeling? We're so lucky that we do get a period every month because it's a monthly report card and everything that you've done the prior month before is going to affect your next period. So that's a mm-hmm. great place to start. See how your period is. Did you do anything different? Is it worse than the day before? Is it regular for your regular, right? We're looking at 24, 26, 28 days, potentially. Your period's a great place to start. You can track your ovulation. You can use a basal body temperature and track your ovulation to see if you're ovulating every day, and that's going to give you an indicator. And you know, when I talk about hormonal healing, like it's not just to have a period. These, like our estrogen, progesterone, play a really big part in protecting cardiovascular health, Alzheimer's health, well, cardiovascular health, Alzheimer's, brain health, osteoporosis long term. So if you can get ahead of your health now, it's going to pay you dividends in the future, not just if you want to have a healthy period, not just if you also want to get pregnant, but like for your future health, hormonal balance is really important, you know, for in all the stages that we'll transition to from, you know, menstruating, perimenopause and menopause. It's so important to make sure that your hormonal health is balanced. So tracking your period's great. Look at your diet, right? Like, are you getting enough protein? Are you getting enough healthy fats? That's really important. Cutting out some junk food, cutting out the processed foods, sometimes it's foundational, making sure you're drinking enough water, making sure your sleep is solid. Like women need more sleep than men. You know, we need about almost 9 hours of sleep. So what can you do from a lifestyle perspective to start making sure you're like, okay, if you're only getting 6 hours, well, how can we get it to 7? How can we get it to 8? Like what's happening with your sleep hygiene? Those are very basic things to do. And then like, if you're living and you're feeling overwhelmed and stressed, look at your plate and your life and where can you scale back a little bit and give yourself more time, you know, more time for yourself. And like, if there's something that you're not satisfied with, do you need to be moving more? Like, where do we just make these like little shifts in the day or the week or throughout the month that can help you progress, right? And move forward in the way that you want to move forward with. So I think, you know, those are really practical things, but sometimes they're very difficult to go and do.
I just want to ask, that 9 hours, does that include naps?
I mean, if it's a solid nap, right? Why not?
I have never been a lengthy sleeper. So when you said 9 hours, I was like, oh my gosh, like I could not even imagine sleeping for 9 hours. It's never right. been part of my experience. Okay. So to recap the practical things that the audience can do is, number one, track your cycle. Mm-hmm. And take a look at, you know, what the report card is saying. You know, is it regular? The cramps, are they there? Are they not? So on and so forth. Does PMS then also come into play here, right?
Absolutely. Like checking.
So how is that an indicator?
You're also like feeling like huge mood swings, irritability, you know, frustration, anger, like leading up to your period. Those are also things to take into consideration. Like we're supposed to be more balanced. And I mean, the female cycle, you know, is really interesting too, because all these things come up the week before our period, and then we have a shedding. So we also get this opportunity to let things go, right? So mm-hmm. emotionally, like checking in with yourself and being like, well, what happened this month or last month? Was there something?
Actually so lucky in that way.
Yeah,
so exactly. Lucky.
You know, our bodies are this like really intuitive, you know, vessels and portals. And like, it's pretty magical what we're capable of doing if we just give ourselves some time and space.
Okay. So PMS is also one of the, so I guess then before the cycle, we would start with being aware of yeah. like, how am I feeling? And then I guess the other physical symptoms that come into play, backache, bloating, cramping, so on and so forth, skin, all that other kind of stuff. And then when the cycle actually happens or the menstruation actually happens, then actually evaluating the quality of that and tracking it for like how long? How long do you need like practical data before we can say, okay, there's some adjustments that I need to be make here or everything's great and I can continue on?
I would say give yourself like 3 months, like track your cycle for 3 months and see what the trends are, right? We want to see some patterns. We want to see some regularity. We want to see like where there's an anomaly, right? So just, you know, it's going to happen every month, hopefully, right? We're ovulating and having a regular period. And yeah, give yourself like a 3 month window to, you know, kind of like just tap into yourself, into your body and get, you know, it's your own benefit of your like own level of deeper self-awareness as well.
Yeah. When it comes to what's considered a regular cycle, I'm super regular. It's at your watch by my cycle, but that doesn't mean it's always like it's generally regular. So when do we then become concerned when there's an outlier, right? Is one outlier something, or is it just, okay, well, what happened this month? And, you know, in the times when I've like been like, oh, that was a really interesting cycle. Like that was really late or really early and nothing happened. Like life was manageable. What does that mean? What do we do with that? Is it maybe, again, if it's like 90 days of irregularity, or is a one-off just exactly that, a one-off?
Yeah, a one-off can definitely be a one-off, right? Like our cycles can be so... A one-off can be exactly that, like a one-off. And it could be maybe you had a more stressful month. You know, there was just higher levels of stress happening that month. Potentially, maybe you were traveling. Maybe you weren't eating as well and like you missed a period. And you can maybe, you know, make that association. But if it's happened now for like 3 or 2 months, that is definitely something to pay attention to.
Okay. So PMS, monitor it. Actual menstrual cycle, monitor it. 90 days. Okay. Anything else that are some practical things that we can do that don't necessarily necessitate going to see a doctor or even coming to see you, but even just, you know, to start bringing that awareness in. And I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is because, you know, you're talking about dealing with patients/clients who have a physical manifestation in their body. And what I'm also hoping to do here is bring awareness to folks before it gets there, because by the time it manifests, that means we've really got something to address. So what can we do before we get there? Oh, I remember self-care. That's what I want to talk about. Self-care. What does that mean?
I think when we want to talk about like really healing our bodies and, you know, on a deeper emotional, mental, spiritual level, that there's a lot we can be doing. So, I mean, there's also just cleaning up your cosmetics, right? Like going clean, going fragrance free where possible. Fragrances are big hormone disruptors. So looking at, you know, where those hormone disruptors are coming from, reducing your plastic use. All of these things are called xenoestrogens, and they mimic the chemical structure of estrogen in our body. And that can lead to an estrogen dominant situation, right? And make period symptoms a lot worse. So cleaning up all of that are practical things that you can do on a day-to-day basis, switching to, you know, cleaner brands, and again, going fragrance-free. So those are some of the practical things. From a holistic, you know, healing, again, taking that inventory of like what's happening in your life, your relationships, your job, your work, where are these stressors coming from if you're feeling really unhappy? Journaling, I've always found to be really great. Having some sort of a meditative practice. I love somatic healing. It's been something that really has helped me a lot, understanding some of my core childhood wounds and where they came from, and doing some of this work. And that inner child work, I think, is so an important aspect of healing, because a lot of our core beliefs and systems of beliefs that we are operating internally are still driving that show and driving decisions. And they can be very limiting. They could be self-sabotaging also, in terms of getting you where you want to be and that next level of yourself, because you've got like this wounded inner child that is still making decisions, right? So, and that can look like still, you know, entering into toxic relationships. And there's a compounding effects here. And like, of course, it's going to affect your hormones. You know, you're not as happy. You're not making serotonin. You're not making all your feel good hormones, right? You can have worse symptoms when your body's out of balance. Again, as women, like our hormones are running the show all day, every day. We can't escape that. Like they're chemical messengers. So really diving deep into some of that deeper work and really giving yourself time and space. I find like when I can start the day with a meditation, just turning into my breath and doing some breath work, or, you know, allows me to move through my day without reacting, but responding.
And absolutely.
Reactions and responses can drive cortisol up. For example, like somebody cutting you off in traffic, right? You can respond to that differently, or a boss, right? So these are the things that we're faced with every day. And if it's really affecting you and you feel like you're running on more negative emotions versus positive emotions, and not showing up to the relationships or your day-to-day and your job in the way that you want to, it's all related.
Yeah. I want to touch on what you talked about there with somatic healing. What a beautiful experience, you know, when you actually tune into your body. In fact, I did it this morning. I was laying in bed and the first thing I did was like a scan, and I'm like, okay, and once you start to get the hang of it, you really become the expert or the guru on what's going on with your body. And, you know, I think you and I had spoken about Louise Hay and her book, Heal Your Body. And so for those of you who have never come across this book before, that's such a practical way to begin really tuning into your body and the emotions that are attached or the blocks that might be attached to any physical disease or manifestation in your body. And it doesn't always immediately make sense, like consciously, but if you just sit with it and give it a moment, I mean, even ask yourself like, okay, where am I showing up like this in this capacity or whatever the case may be? All the answers are truly sitting within you. And it's such a great way to begin to know your body so that when you do go and see someone such as Neetu or even your primary caregiver or practitioner, you are armed with some information about what your body is really trying to say to you. So I can't recommend the book enough. Get it, get it, get it.
Absolutely. I love that book as well. And I love her.
Yeah, it's my go-to medical. And it's crazy because, you know, I mean, I use it everywhere. I was sitting with a friend last night and we were having dinner and she was talking about her shoulders. I'm like, oh, I have my book.
Let's see what's going on.
Well, the thing is she said to me, she's like, I'm pretty sure the last time we met, that was the same thing. I'm like, yeah. So what are you in resistance on? What are you not wanting to go ahead and tackle here and actually take a look at? And then we started talking about saboteurs and you know how that story goes. So anyways, so just as we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to share today? Of course, I'll include all your contact, your social, so on and so forth, how people can find you. I know you talked about there being so much education that you put out there. I think on your socials is really where you put a lot of the education.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, the bigger picture is like showing up to life with your full vitality and your energy. And like, that's something that every woman deserves, because I see so many women that are running on empty, that are burnt out, exhausted, and literally going through their day to day like this. And like, this is a quality of life issue, right? It's mm-hmm. like, these are the days of our lives. And mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to just be running on empty every single day, unhappy with symptoms that are holding you back from a version of yourself that you really want. So it's not just like hormones or your period. It's like there's a bigger picture here of a life that you deserve, and the way you deserve to be living it is really why I share all that information, to empower women so that they can go and be that person, version of themselves that they want to be, and take up space where they need to.
What a beautiful reminder. The purpose actually of the journey, contrary to what people think, yeah. is ultimately joy. Yeah. That is to find joy, to be in joy, to be in the moment. And if there's anything that's holding you back from that, the physical manifestation is often a wake-up call, because yeah. that'll get your attention if you're in pain. Yeah, it'll really exactly. get your attention right now. Yeah. Exactly. So, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much again for joining me today and sharing your experience and your knowledge and your expertise and all things women's health related. I would love to have you back again. And for listeners or viewers, thank you as always for joining myself and Neetu today. As always, if you have any questions, you can send me a message and I will get back to you. So without anything else, thank you so much and take care.
Thank you.